Hey guys, it's Charlie and welcome to another episode of Talking to Charlie. Emotion has been paid mention to on a number of occasions to date. It goes without saying really that it comes hand in hand when hosting a podcast that focuses on cancer. We had my oncologist discuss what it was like when sharing the news of a diagnosis to a patient. Cancer survivors, including myself, talk about what it felt like when being diagnosed too. But today I wanted to get a different perspective. I want to learn more about what it's like as a family member, friend, or in this instance, parent, learning of a close relative, mate, or your own child being diagnosed. Today, I'm going to be joined by a very close friend and father of three, whose youngest daughter was diagnosed with an extremely rare form of leukemia 9 years ago, and get a first-hand account of what it was like for him, his wife, and family throughout that whole process. So I'm delighted to be joined by my very good mate, Paddy Richardson. Paddy, hi, mate. Welcome.
Hi, Charlie. How are you doing?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. Listen, just for the benefit of our listeners, I suppose I should sort of set this up. We go back a long way. I'm proud to call you one of my best mates. We grew up together. We went to school together. You captained my cricket team, unbeaten, I might add. So say we've got some history would be an understatement. But I think to have you along as a guest, delighted. And I think let's jump straight into it. As you well know, for the show, it's based on the premise of trying to help those directly or indirectly affected by cancer. Thus far, I'm sure you've listened to all the episodes, mate, I hope. I've had my oncologist, nutritionist, a couple of patients. And with the oncologist, we touched on, you know, what it must be like trying to give someone their diagnosis and tell someone they've got cancer and how that feels. With patients, including myself, how it felt upon diagnosis and trying to share some of those feelings. Today, I really want to try and, I guess, get a different perspective. I'd mentioned in the past that it's important to lean on your network of family and friends, and that's really sort of vital once one is diagnosed. But also, I think also seeking compassion towards them, because also it's something very alien and unfamiliar for them, be that a family member or a close friend being diagnosed. Now, without trying to gloss over it, I know you've certainly have your or certainly had your fair share of said experiences. So, let's rewind. I'm going to get straight into it now, mate. Let's rewind. I think it is 9 years now. Yourself, Alice, your beautiful wife, your eldest daughter, Romy, your second daughter, Hazy, probably, I think, 18 months old back then.
Yeah.
And Alice was also, I believe, pregnant, 38, 40 weeks pregnant at the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you were working in Singapore as well, right?
Yeah, so we were. This was... I'm trying to think. It does feel like many moons ago, but also feels like yesterday in the same vein. It was 2015. We'd been living in Singapore for a few years and we actually moved back to the UK April time, 2015, I think it was. We had Romy, our daughter, who was four, Hazy, who was about 18 months at the time. And Alice was pregnant with our third.
Singapore, you're just there for work basis, is that right?
We'd been living in Singapore for a few years and we moved back to the UK, which was really exciting. We'd been in Singapore for 5 years and were really excited to actually be back in the UK after a stint away. So everything was great. I had a good job, amazing wife, two amazing girls, a third child on the way. We didn't know at that point what we were going to have. And through that summer, Hazy was just generally unwell. She had a lot of temperatures, grumpy, not happy, nothing majorly worrying. It just seemed like it was just normal sort of child illnesses, bugs, yeah, and things like that. But she was just really, really unhappy. She had these rashes and sort of spotty marks and things. And we just...
It was almost, as you say, sort of almost dismissed in the sense that she's just a young kid going through the motions in terms of...
We weren't overly worried. It's not... Young children are never easy. They often get ill, coughs and colds and temperatures, and they're very susceptible to picking up these things. So we weren't overly concerned, but it was still our daughter. We were still wondering what was going on. We definitely had a couple of visits to the doctors and a giving of antibiotics and calpols and stuff and just trying to sort of manage it. And it just sort of reached a point where she was getting more unwell rather than better. Yeah. We actually went to A&E one day and they did a blood test and gave her IV antibiotics and she seemed to improve. She went back home and we never actually got the results of that blood test. It was then Alice, I was actually not the girls in London. And again, she was really, really unwell. So went to see a doctor in London at the time.
She's remonstrating this to you as well at the same time, right? She's saying, Daddy, Mummy, and I'm feeling really, you know,
yeah, she was too little. She could, you don't really know what's going on. So we had another blood test. This was probably several weeks later. And it was all a bit of a sort of logistical nightmare. I actually went down to London to get them, to bring them home. And we were, I remember it very well. We were driving. It was probably early evening. It was dark, I think. So this was now autumn time. We were driving back and the doctor called Alice on her mobile. And it was clear just from listening to any one side of the conversation from Alice that there was a problem. And he actually said that he was going to come and see us that evening.
Wow.
And okay. Alice said, what's wrong? What's the problem? And he said, I don't want to talk about it over the phone. At your house in a couple of hours.
How soon after is this then since the initial, as we said, childhood illnesses, if you like? How far gone are we?
Probably a few months from start to finish. So when we moved back in April, she was perfectly healthy and it happened very slowly. It wasn't a quick deterioration, but there was a deterioration over a period of time to the point where we actually got, which turned out to be our second blood test. The first one we found out later clotted and they never got the test results, but they didn't call us back in. So this was the second blood test. And that's when the doctor came to our house, which was also pretty unbelievable of him.
Those 2 hours must have been like time has stood still,
right? It was just total panic because we didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know what was wrong. He didn't want to talk about it over the phone, which you can imagine doesn't make you feel that everything's going to be okay. He also did say that we would be going into hospital that evening, but he wanted to come and see us first. So we got home, we put the girls to bed, Hazy was asleep, and the doctor came around and knocked on the door, and there he was, and went straight up to have a look at Hazy asleep upstairs in her cot, sharing a room with her sister Romy, came back down, sat us down, and said that he had seen essentially a very abnormal blood test result, was suspicious that could be leukemic cells. The white cells were off the scale, and he was immediately concerned that leukemia was a possibility, and we were to go into hospital that night to start a sort of process of actual diagnosis. So that evening I had to get my mum around, I think it was, to stay the night. I can't even really remember. Me and Alice and Hazy went in to hospital where we were seen and told again that it was looking like there was a leukemia potential diagnosis. We then were put in an ambulance, or Alice and Hazy were put in an ambulance. We were transferred to Addenbrookes, which is from another hospital, which is obviously a bigger center for these sorts of illnesses, again, which we're very lucky to have only 45 minutes from where we lived. And there we were. I actually then came home to try and be there for my daughter waking up, which sadly I was a bit late. She was already up. So it just went into,
straight away, she's curiosity there from her going,
it was gone, she was only four, so it was difficult. And actually it was probably another 1 to 2 weeks before she was actually diagnosed. So she was diagnosed with a very rare form of leukemia. Is well known, and reasonably there are common forms of leukemia, particularly in children. And a lot of people have been affected by it, or know people, or certainly know the disease reasonably well. Hazy's leukemia was a leukemia, I can't do the long name, but it's called JMML. It's a very rare form of leukemia that only appears in children. And through that period, they thought, because of living in Singapore, maybe it's actually a tropical disease. Maybe it's, you know, they were actually ruling out lots of things because the more common leukemias were ruled out. So we have got hope that it was some kind of tropical disease. So there was a little bit of backwards and forwards and blows and hope, and probably just similar to anyone going through this sort of process in the early days of it. And then it was a couple of weeks later, Alice, literally about to pop, pregnant, were told that she had this JMML, which was a very, very serious leukemia, wouldn't respond to typical leukemia chemotherapies and treatment programs. The only form of treatment is a bone marrow transplant, stem cell transfer. And that was those were the steps that we were going to have to take. But this was right at the early stage where they would have to start looking for donors and things like that. So the sort of conventional leukemia route and chemotherapies and things like that was not an option for us. It was, she's got cancer, she's got blood cancer. The step for you, which is usually a much later step for other leukemias, was to go straight to a BMT, bone marrow transplant.
Bone marrow,
and that was the news we got, probably about 2 weeks after we were called into hospital by that amazing doctor. And we started that process of trying to keep the disease under wraps, trying to keep it under control, whilst some amazing organizations started to try and find a stem cell donor for us. That's where we were. And then Alice had a baby, and then we had a baby and amongst all of that, which was our son, Wilbur. So which was back in Adam.
I mean, look, I'm not a parent. I can't even fathom what it must be like, but are you able to give us a steer upon that final confirmation of JMML, I think you mentioned it was, how you and Alice, or you in particular, how that even felt, particularly such a life-threatening?
Yes, it was complete bombshell. You never expect it. Your two-year-old daughter, almost two-year-old daughter, having something so life-threatening. A lot of questions, a lot of trying to understand what was wrong and how this was now going to play out. Doctors were and are just incredible.
Yeah.
But of course, they don't necessarily try and, they got to paint the whole picture for you. They've got to be truthful as to the situation you're in. We were given likelihoods and odds of success.
Oh, really?
But ultimately, it was largely irrelevant because it's such a rare form of leukemia. So the fear was that this wasn't going to work out, and we had a long journey to go through and a lot of sort of logistical problems and worry about our oldest daughter, and we had a newborn, and how was this work? How is this going to work? How are we going to operate as a family? How are we going to be able to sustain what was going to be regular periods in hospital?
Because I guess in terms of resource, you pay mention of the doctors obviously being phenomenal, but it's the dread of sort of go on to Google, all that kind of shit, where you're like, because it's so alien.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was for you guys. But also with your friends and family in terms of that network we alluded to at the beginning, were they able to come forward? Not the friends and family, but what's the resource like for parents who have just been...
they're amazing resources. I mean, the NHS is a lot of people have a lot of criticism, negativity about the NHS, and I can understand that. Long waiting lists at GPs, and it's all a bit of a, it's all a bit of a shit show, to be honest, obviously in the country at the moment, and a lot of politics around it. But ultimately, when the chips are down and you've got a real serious problem, the NHS have got some of the best specialists, as you know, best doctors, best treatment, best support in the world. And that was us. We were there right at the coalface of difficulty, and there was countless experts and amazing doctors who dedicated their life to trying to resolve or improve the survival chances of diseases like this. A huge amount of support and charities. And it was interesting afterwards to look back and think how we did deal with it, because both Alice and I, husband and wife, actually dealt with it very differently. We had quite different perspectives on what we were going to be going through. Alice wanted to absorb all that information and look at everything that was about the disease. I didn't just felt that is not what I wanted to do. I didn't go and read all the leaflets and try to understand everything, because I think it was just too scary for me. I just trusted the doctors and the staff and the nurses and just went with their sort of process. And Alice, again, being a mum and a dad, you've got very different perspectives and on it, and some people may have the same perspective, but that was our story, that we looked at it quite differently, and that throughout the whole treatment was something that came up again, us dealing with it in different ways. So friends and family were incredible, and anyone that's got family will know you can usually rely on them pretty heavily for the caring of our children, for logistics. We were in out of hospital after this point pretty regularly for short blood transfusions to 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 days, staying in hospital if Hazy was feeling particularly unwell. they put us on various medications that helped control the disease, but life was definitely turned upside down. So family and friends were critical. And what I realized later is that they also need support. So we were the parents and the daughter, but of course for my parents and Alice's mum and our brothers and sisters and family and friends, it's hard for them too, because they all love Hazy. They're all part of our wider family, but we can't support them because we're in the epicenter of this, but they're still, you know, need their support networks, 100%. Their friends.
And I think that's where I mentioned, I think it's important to seek compassion towards your friends and family at times like this, because it's very alien for them. What about Romy? How are you relaying everything to her at the age of four, her sister? What's the message there?
It had to be very simple. Hazy's not well. We need to be seeing doctors a lot. She's got a problem in her body. We tried to be very honest and very open, but there was no point getting into
a child here. So you have to,
there's no point getting into medical detail, but it was very, very hard for her. And I think perhaps we'll come on to more of the story in a minute, but certainly it impacted everyone. This wasn't just Hazy going through this. It wasn't just her parents going through this. We all went through it. And it was very much, we talk about it now, something our family went through, because actually for Romy, who was four at the time, she probably didn't really have her parents around very much, not just physically, but emotionally. Because if Alice was in hospital with Hazy and I was at home with Romy, and who was then a tiny baby Wilbur, whilst I was there and trying to concentrate on her and look after her, my emotion was probably in hospital with Alice and Hazy. What was going on, what was happening? Because it was a very difficult time when we didn't know what was happening from really day to day almost. So over a period of time, which turned into months and years, that leaves an impact. And we've really noticed that with Romy.
You've noticed that now.
Just noticed it over the years that we all suffered, and we've all looked to try and heal some of that trauma, which was not just on Hazy, it was on the whole family. And as I said, our wider family as well.
And also you mentioned Alice gave birth, right? You had your third child as well. I mean, did that sort of go almost not under the radar as such, but somebody obviously that you'd usually celebrate and be joyful, you've got Hazy going on and you've just had your third child. The emotion, like,
and it was amazing. I mean, we had a beautiful baby boy. That's something to celebrate in any given situation. And we definitely were over the moon. And then sort of reality snaps back quite quickly afterwards, because we need to get help to look after the baby if Alice was in hospital, or she would take Wilbur with her and Hazy. So it was certainly tough and challenging, but definitely amazing to have a third.
Well, and I'm very proud to call him my godson as well. So
indeed,
a bit of a legend in my heart.
Absolutely.
And now, so just, I know we sort of skipped around there a bit. You paid mention to upon diagnosis, it was the bone marrow transplant was the next sort of. So you were looking for a donor. I mean, I guess, do you go for direct family in the first instance before potentially looking elsewhere? What's the play from there?
So Alice and I were tested. We weren't a match. Actually, we collected Wilbur's umbilical cord, because umbilical cords have the most amazing stem cells in them.
Wow. Great.
And if the blood from the umbilical cord is a match, then it can be a really, really good way of going through a bone marrow transplant. And that is quite a complicated process, having that collected and taken away. A courier had to arrive at the right time and collect it, and that was taken away and tested. Sadly, wasn't a match, so that didn't work. Was not a match. And so then there are various amazing organizations like Anthony Nolan, who have compiled and promoted people to be on the bone marrow transplant register. And please, if anyone's listening and they're not on Anthony Nolan, and there are other organizations that do it, please get on the list, because it's reasonably easy to donate stem cells for a bone marrow transplant. So there was nothing in the immediate family that helped. So we were.
Would the professionals think that as the direct family would have more chance of being a match as opposed to a foreigner, if you like?
Absolutely.
And so once you've learned that you guys aren't matches, you must be like going, oh shit, right.
Yeah, there was, went through us and went through siblings, umbilical cord, none were a match. They were reasonably positive about finding a match, and there are levels of suitability. So it's not a black or white situation. some donors can be a close enough match, but you can find better matches. It's quite a complex process that I'm not going to be, I'm no expert in the details. Essentially, we needed a donor, but they were reasonably confident they'd find one. They were hopeful, which was good. It was just a waiting game. And there were some, you know, we put together some, you know, some social media stuff and things like that. And a couple of campaigns, thanks to Anthony Nolan, where, you know, we tried to search far and wide and get people to add onto the list for the benefit of us or others. So we did find a donor, and then we went through a bone marrow transplant at Great Ormond Street, which again was just the most amazing place to be.
How long was that timeline then between the diagnosis and then finding the donor?
So it was about six months approximately.
Wow,
well,
okay.
Sorry, to the BMT, to the bone marrow transplant.
Wow.
So
it's trying to manage the illness.
Yeah.
The illness.
Which was,
wow,
as I said, in and out of hospital for long days or days and nights, depending on how hazy was. We were largely based at home, but we're just in hospital. If we weren't staying overnight, we were in several days a week because Hazy's bone marrow wasn't functioning properly. So she would have to have blood transfusions and platelets, and anytime there was a temperature, we would be admitted into hospital for IV antibiotics because her immunity was compromised. So
every day though, for each day that came, there was another potential that you might get the call that goes, oh, we found a donor. So it's, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm trying to get my head around. There's not a sort of stipulated period of time. It's like the search was on, but it took 6 months by the time you actually found
it took several months. And we were just sitting by the phone dealing day to day, not knowing whether what was going to happen next, really.
So it's a period of time. Just, that is long. Let's not lie. 6 months is a long period of time. Again, your emotions, everything such like must.
It was absolutely tough. And actually, it got worse because we had the BMT, which was a period of 3-4 months in Great Ormond Street in isolation. So we were in a airlocked room. Only me or Alice were allowed in, other than the medical staff. Hazy was in there permanently the whole time. Aggressive chemotherapy.
I think you started getting the media attention then, didn't you? I think, is that right? There was a few
things that we were doing to try and, first of all, find our donor, but then try and promote these organizations that were working to help us and working to help so many people. So we went through bone marrow transplant, aggressive chemotherapy. Then you have the actual stem cell transfer, which is actually just a blood transfusion. It's not an operation. And then, unfortunately, a couple of months after that, she relapsed. So essentially, the bone marrow transplant didn't work. It didn't bind with her. It didn't, whilst it was a match, it didn't do what it was meant to do. And that was probably crushing. Well, there was a lot of difficult times, but that was probably number two in the list of crushing blows, you know, being told the diagnosis and then that treatment not working. So the BMT not working was the second one.
So does that mean a revisit to the said donor again, or is that no?
So what happened after that? And typically, you know, not a lot of people are able to go through a second bone marrow transplant. For some diseases, they don't even do a second time. For us, it was an option because this particular disease has had poor success rate on one bone marrow transplant. If the patient can get to, is physically capable of getting to the second one and going through that process, because it's a very, very aggressive treatment. The treatment in itself can often be fatal because of the aggressive chemotherapy and the complications that come from that. So
she's only a little girl, let's not forget. You know, she's 18 months. You know,
exactly.
She's by no means sort of adult figure here or body.
No. And actually, a lot of adults would never get through this. Children are more resistant than others, than people older. So we did go back to the drawing board, essentially back to another donor search. Again, this period was even more visits to hospital, even more transfusions, trying to manage her health, having got the disease in the first place and then gone through this really, really aggressive treatment for the first BMT. But we were lucky enough to find this was then a different donor. First donor wouldn't have been explored again. Found another donor, a young
gentleman. Did you meet the donors themselves?
We didn't, although we've now been put in touch with our second donor, who was a young German guy in his 20s, who sounds
beautiful.
The most amazing man, called Christian, who one day maybe he can listen to this and we'll get the chance to thank him face to face. But we have been in touch with him. We then eventually got round to having another go, our last shot at the bone marrow transplant again in Great Ormond Street Hospital. And
but that was another massive concerted effort to try and find said donor. I think I may mention the media. Did I pick up Harry Judge got behind
Yes. I mean, it was just, I don't know how these things reach people, but there's a lot of kindness out there. There's a lot of love in the world. And when people are impacted by these extraordinary challenges, particularly children, it's amazing how people rally around. So there was, again, similar process, months in isolation. But miraculously, she got through the second one and the BMT worked. So there was some light at the end of this tunnel that we got through it. And this whole period was a couple of years, at least at this point, moving into trying to bring her back to health, teaching her how to walk and eat and talk, because a lot of those things just fell by the wayside. So she didn't develop during that period. So there was a lot of rehabilitation and fear and concern, but we got to ring the bell, which is for any cancer patient something that they always want to get to, and plenty of people don't.
A magical moment, right?
A magical moment. But we rang the bell, which was incredible, particularly to do it at GOSH, which, as I said, was just the most amazing people and place to be part of. So again, we feel very lucky and grateful that we got to that point.
And so that's again, diagnosis, so period of time. So we've got, you just mentioned a couple of years now, is that, till we finally got to the bell ringing? What's
Yeah, basically. I mean, the whole timeline was for us several years from start to finish. So low moments and high moments throughout it. But it was it was a long chunk, and it's just day by day during that period. I mean, I'm sure through your treatments and you can recognize that you're not looking a week ahead, a month ahead, months ahead. It's just day by day. You just go through. It's actually extraordinary how resilient. I found it extraordinary how resilient one can be just to get up. Just to go about the day, just to be able to eat, sleep, take care of children when you're in the midst of crisis.
Yeah, because, you know, making a living, you've got your career to think about as well.
I work around the standing, but I had to carry on working. So a lot of the time, you know, I wasn't there for the other children. If Alice was in hospital, and me and Alice would swap in hospital twice a week, certainly when we were in Great Ormond Street. So I would go in Friday to Monday, Alice would do Monday to Friday, and we would just swap twice a week for over a period of months. And you'd have to have washed clothes. You'd have to go in with washed clothes. You had to wear aprons and masks and wash hands. It was a very sterile environment. So again, logistically, there were some things to deal with.
And then Wilbur's suddenly turning 2 years old almost by the time it's...
Yeah. And mercifully, you know, has very little, has no memory of it. And actually Hazy has very little memory of it herself. Romy can remember quite a bit. And as I said, something that we've all suffered through and all been impacted by.
Yeah.
But we were one of the lucky ones. We got through, and Hazy's at school thriving now and doing brilliantly. And, you know, we're unbelievably blessed.
Yeah. So the bell ringing, what was that like for you guys, for Hazy herself, for you guys? I mean, given that roller coaster of emotions you've been going through, that usually for most people that signals the end, if you like. As you say, it's a tradition. It's a very joyous, magical moment for anyone who does get rings it. What were you feeling?
It was, it was amazing.
Question, really, but,
it's actually not a straightforward answer, because in theory, it's an amazing moment. And it was absolutely for us. And we celebrated it with family, and it was incredible. And some of the relationships we'd built through that time, particularly with the nurses, were just incredible. And the nurses for me were, again, me and Alice dealt with things quite differently in terms of understanding what was happening. But for me, the nurses were instrumental to my survival. They were the ones caring, not just for Hazy, but for me in that time. They were the ones there. And if they're ever listening, Michaela and Rose and everybody, they were just unbelievable. These sort of young 20-year-old girls just holding us in the palms of their hand. But coming back to the bell ring, was incredible. And everyone, all our family and friends were just so over the moon. And they were so, wow, you must be on cloud nine. Wow, you must feel amazing. Wow, you've done it. You've achieved it. Yeah. You're better. Not a bit of it. We didn't feel like that at all.
Relief, but there was also, you know, just
there was relief, but just still concern and worry, and we couldn't just go back to our old life and just be like, oh, that's done with, let's move on, we're happy now, hasn't it worked out well? And people are right to be positive about it, of course, because we were very lucky, but it didn't feel amazing and incredible. We felt disjointed, disconnected, worried, scared, fearful. We had been through a trauma over a period of several, what turned out to be several years, and that impacts you. And it took some time for us to, first of all, realize that, understand it, and then sort of work through it. And we saw a lot of impacts, particularly on Romy emotionally, on Hazy physically, and emotionally, of course. So it was a period of really difficult readjustment, because we just didn't feel like we could just go back to going about your day life, because it's all kind of becomes, well, during that crisis, normal day life is just completely alien to you. So you can't just switch back in. It was a tough period to readjusting.
So post bell ringing, what was life for Hazy thereafter? What's the process then? Checkups thereafter?
Yes, a lot of checkups. Just a lot of routine checkups. Appointments that slowly sort of fade away. She's on a medication, a form of medication, which she'll be on forever. But ultimately, she's fighting fit and now has an appointment once a year, which is fairly quick, and you can see she's thriving. But it was a process that we went through, and we're grateful for in a way, because we learned a lot through it, and we wouldn't change anything. But it probably the best thing was we learned how to explore ourselves a little bit more, understand how our mind works, and how our mind and body is connected, and how
conscious awareness, right?
How these traumas can impact you, and trying to share that a little bit with others.
And tell me, how you, I mean, we talked about how you're feeling, obviously, it was, yes, everyone's going, you must feel amazing, you must feel whatever. I know personally as well, you know, I relapsed, I mean, by no means to anywhere near the extent of Haze, but I always have this slight worries. There is that element which thinks, oh, will it, won't it come back one day? That, for, as a parent as well of a young child, does that play on your mind? I don't mean to sort of have a negative stuff.
No, but, of course.
I guess anxiety or the anxiousness around, does this thing ever rear its ugly head again?
I'm constantly reminded of what we went through, because I just look at any of my children, actually not just Hazy, that, you know, they have a sore throat or a cold or a temperature, and it's definitely triggering, particularly the temperature, because that was what sent us into hospital. If the temperature's was there, you're in hospital, and that was always difficult for obvious reasons. But
Have you managed that yourself, then, being completely candid? I know that I've had my therapist on here in the past, again, as a sort of resource for parents post-child sort of diagnosis, survival, etc.
There is so much help available, and I got help, Alice got help, to try and at least unpick what we've been through and understand it. And then, of course, it gives you the opportunity to explore other things from your own childhoods or from your own reaction to certain triggers, and explore the whole area of mental health, which has been of huge benefit, not just to me, but to us as a couple and us as a family. And I feel much better equipped to parent, actually, because of that. So it's an amazing. Again, a really big blessing for us that through this adversity, we learn a lot. And we've particularly seen it with Romy. I mean, I'll give you an example. When Hazy was better, if we'd get in the car, and I would get in the car with Romy, she'd be in the back and I'd be sitting in the front. And if I'd forgotten something and I'd have to go to the boot to put something in or get something out or go and put a seatbelt on, if I went around, and this would be sitting outside our house behind a gate in a village in the middle of nowhere, or not in the middle of nowhere, but not in the city, if I went round the back of the car, she would scream, she would freak out. I would have to go around the front. I would have to go around the front of the car so she could see me. Now, quite often we look at our children, and perhaps our parents' generation would be like, oh, that child, they're just a bit of a worrier, or they're just like this, or they're just like that. But you need to look at these things and look for these signals, because they're on a learning curve, you know, to 18. And you as a parent have the ability to channel things in different ways through getting help through asking questions, through exploring your own understanding of these topics. So it was fairly clear that, of course, Romy was very, very worried and panicked about not seeing her parents. And you can connect that very quickly and easily to
seeing her parents go off to hospital.
And seeing her parents go off to hospital.
There's a slight attachment thing going on here.
Yeah, exactly. Panic. And that was just one thing that was actually clearer to identify and work on. But without the support of others and without good friends like yourself, where we can talk about these things, and with other friends that you've got and I've got, we've got, just being able to slightly, don't be defensive, get off that typical sort of male bravado bandwagon and start actually saying to each other, I'm feeling really, really shit and I don't know why. And that's the starting point, whether it's to your wife, whether it's to your best friend, whether it's to a therapist, whether it's to a doctor, whether it's to a teacher, whether it's to, you know, a friend, a neighbor, it doesn't really matter. That's the starting point. And we feel very lucky that we've been through some of the stuff we've been through, because it's made us a better, stronger family. I hope it doesn't happen to others, and goodness me, we've been luckier than so many people that have lost children to leukemia and lost, you know, as you've talked about in these podcasts, a lot of loss out there, and cancer is hugely at the front and center of these losses. So we feel lucky, but I suppose it's just, hopefully if people have been through it, and maybe they have got through it and they have survived it, or children, maybe they can resonate with that. That's not the end of the story and everything's not all right. So to try and help those people a little bit who are still struggling and suffering, even though the circumstances played out to their advantage, of course, a big shout out to all those people that things turned out badly as well, which is considerably worse. But
and just on that, you're probably going to hate me, kill me for saying this. I know Alice has aspirations of publishing a book of some description about what we've just obviously clearly been discussing. And I think really that would serve as a huge instrumental resource for any parent that might have a child that's being diagnosed. You yourself, obviously putting yourself forward for this podcast, you're very, very grateful. Do you try and put yourself out there a bit again in terms of anyone that might want to reach out, or could anyone want to reach out, say, look, Paddy, lovely guy, really enjoyed listening to him. Don't be afraid to get in touch.
You are better off talking to Alice, by the way. I should have said that at the start. She's the one that...
far better. She's so much more beautiful to look at.
She's far more eloquent and would do a much better job. So I wish you'd ask her to do this, not me. I think there's a... In my experience, Alice has always been someone that has been better at asking for help, and she's much more wise to these sorts of things. So it's nice, hopefully, for me to talk about it a little bit, because it's uncomfortable for me. Therefore, I want to do it, because you've got to sometimes push that discomfort in order to actually find healing or find explanations for things, as you know only too well. So always happy to talk to people, and we love sort of stepping into what we went through and using it to try and talk to others. Again, I would think of our parents' generation as, you know, push it away. Don't talk about it. It's done. Let's move on. You and I both know that's not the way to deal with stuff. No, let's step into it. So we always like talking about it.
We've got involved with some. I love that.
Step into it. Absolutely. Let's get stuck in. So we love talking about it in a way that is not self-gratifying. It's just something that it's made an imprint on our life, and we like to try and celebrate that or try and use it to advantage rather than just ignore it, put it to one side.
Yeah. And just quickly, Hazy herself, I've seen her more recently as well, absolutely beautiful little girl. You mentioned Romy, obviously having her sort of experiences and how it's played out. You know, have you noticed anything in Hazy, her sort of day-to-day, or is she just mucking, throwing herself straight back into being a child?
We're very lucky to have three healthy children. They're all getting stuck in, and as anyone with children knows, there are daily challenges. But it is interesting that Hazy from, we feel, and she's only 10. She was 10 a couple of days ago. So long way to go before she's an adult, and we'll have to see how she goes. But it would appear at this point that emotionally she's quite strong. And I think that's probably because she had Alice or myself with her 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, sleeping in her same room. So we were there physically, you know, went through an unbelievable period that you would never wish on anyone, and an adult wouldn't be able to cope with what she coped through physically. But she has recovered from that physically. There may well be things in her development that need to be addressed. The other children, particularly Romy, physically not impacted, but emotionally certainly seems that the emotional impact of what we went through was stark. So again, it's parents out there, you're concerned about all your children, whether one's ill and the other one's fine. Everyone knows that these things can impact children in a different way. So yeah, it's a blessing and a curse to some extent, children, because you love them with all your heart, and it breaks your heart when there's even the briefest moment of unhappiness or pain. But again, we wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, amazing. Well, mate, honestly, what an incredible story. What an inspiration she is. And thank you for being so candid about your feelings, your emotions, the experience itself. I mean, is there any just parting words of advice or something you might be able to give to any parents out there?
One thing that springs to mind is when what I found interesting was how different people dealt with me during this process. There were friends and family, lots of people around. And to that phrase I used earlier, stepping in, I think all my family, of course, and quite a few friends stepped into that, and people don't really know what to say because no one knows.
So sort of you felt there was a bit of an eggshell element treading around.
I think some people don't know what to say, and there's nothing wrong with saying it's going to be okay. And I remember someone saying that to me, someone you know, a friend of ours, father, and he was probably the only person. Doctors aren't saying it, nurses aren't saying it, family aren't saying it, friends aren't saying it. And he said to me, it's going to be fine. You're going to get through this. She's going to be better.
If I know you, I bet there's a tear.
Of course. And he didn't know that, of course. And if he had been wrong, I wouldn't go back years later and say, but you told me something different. But at the time, that's what I needed to hear. I needed someone to say to me, she's going to beat this. She's going to be fine. And that gave me on that day, at that moment, enough strength to do the next 10 minutes of that day or the next hour. And I'll always remember that. So I guess everybody deals with these things differently, and parents between you will deal with it differently. And so I can't really offer any advice, but what I would say to those people, just step into it, whether you're parents and you're trying to work out how to get through it, step into it. If you're friends, if you're family, just step into it. And you may not know what to say. You may not know what to do. The last thing we didn't enjoy is people saying, do let us know if you need anything. That was appreciative. You know, we did appreciate it, but I can't think of what I need. I need my daughter to be well, and no one can do that. So just step into it, just act, just do stuff. And we're very lucky to have some amazing support. But if someone's going through a tough time, I deal with it differently now than how I used to before he's got ill. I don't know if that's advice or not, but
sound, incredible advice. As I say, really grateful. Thank you so much for your time. I think we're probably going to have to step out of this now. You're incredible. I love you as a mate, and I love your family, and can't wait to see you all again soon. And thanks again, mate.
Well, it's a pleasure, and love you too. And it's a great thing you're doing. So delighted to help. And if there's anyone out there that ever wants to talk to us or meet us going through something similar, we'd be only happy. So
I think there's a what do you call it, petition to be done to try and get Christian over to yours at some point.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah,
Christian,
definitely.
If you're listening, get out of here, mate. All right, dude.
Love
see you
it,
soon.
Mate.
Lots of love.
Take care.
Right. Bye-bye. Wow, what an incredible story of such a brave, courageous and young little girl in Hazy. But also her amazing family too. I mean, we heard firsthand the ups and downs, trials and tribulations of how your own child and siblings' diagnosis can affect everyone and in so many different ways under that same roof. But again, and we find ourselves coming back to it, please don't be afraid to ask for help, but also don't be afraid to extend a compassionate hand to those that you think that might need it. After all, just those six simple words, everything's going to be okay, has such a profound effect on Paddy. I'm Charlie. This was Talking to Charlie. Thanks again for listening, guys, and look forward to seeing you again soon. Take care.